Hello and welcome to another edition of Turn Out a Punk Footnotes. I am one of your hosts, Damien Abraham, and your other host, as always, is my friend and your friend too, Chris O'Toole. Chris, how you doing, buddy?
Good, buddy. What are you doing?
I'm back. You know, it was a tour. I apologize for my absence to you, but I have returned. And I am very happy to be home talking to you again.
Well, likewise, my friend.
How have you been?
Same old, man. Nothing changes.
Nothing changes. Well, we've got two episodes to talk about today.
Yeah.
We've got a lot to get into. I guess before we do, any show reviews, any music things you want to get to?
I feel like I did see a punk rock concert in your absence, but I cannot remember what it was. No, we did the Not Dead Yet review last time we did this. Maybe I didn't go to anything. I tried to hit one that I didn't go. I guess I didn't hit anything in the last couple weeks.
I did make it to see some shows on tour.
Nice.
I saw this band Fucked Up Play way too many times. I also saw Candy, who are absolutely phenomenal, and Bad Waitress, who are all absolutely phenomenal as well. Great bands, both different sorts of takes on punk rock, one from Virginia Beach, one from right here in Southern Ontario. And they were cool, really cool bands to tour with, really great. And Milspec as well. We did some dates with Milspec in the beginning as well. Mutual Friends put out a great record this year as well.
Still
kind of signing all the good bands. Not all the good bands, but a lot of good bands.
That sounded like a backhanded compliment, but I know what you meant by it.
No, I mean, just Greg. Greg's like that guy, right? Like, it's we're talking about Chris Dodge.
Yeah.
And I think Chris Dodge is definitely like, he was the zeitgeist to an era in the same way Greg Mental was the zeitgeist to an era. But Greg Mental also continues to be right on top of, you know, the bands that are happening.
That's a great point of discussion. It's funny we're hitting that right off the top of the show. But I agree. And I feel like you could probably take maybe a list of 10 names and you could nail down all of the vital eras through 10 people being the narrative. And those two that you mentioned would be on there, on my list anyway.
Yeah, like, I think depending on the scope you're covering or the scene you're covering, but
yeah,
like,
of course, sorry, North American centric, but yes.
And DIY centric, I'd say. Like,
yes.
I think once again, not two names you immediately think of when you think of like capital DIY, but at the same time, like two people that have done it DIY the whole time.
I guess what I'm trying to say is, regardless of that, whatever metric you want to use, I feel if I could name 10 names, those two being on it, and like say this is like, I don't know, broadly termed punk or aggressive, you know, subcultural music of whatever type you want to say, this is it. And then there are 8 other names on there. I think it would cover the swath that would give people what I believe to be the true identity of what this quote unquote subculture is.
Yeah, I think, and
that's what I'm saying.
And I think if you took last week's episode, or the Chris Dodge episode, I should say, where you're talking about Fat Records, you're talking about Power Violence stuff, you're talking about Doom and Crust stuff, and you put it with next week's episode with Thurston Moore, we're talking about like alternative stuff and New York hardcore, and it's like, it's kind of like that is, those two cover me perfectly and all my tastes in music pretty much
when it comes to punk rock. I agree. It's funny that you have Mr. Moore coming up because I have been on more of a kick lately with that, like my favorite period of Sonic Youth, which is that late 80s into early 90s period.
Yeah, no, it's dude, I don't want to talk about next week's episode now because I will, you've already been forced to hear it enough from me ever since I cut it. But yeah, that is, oosh, it's next week's a monster. This week we've got two monster episodes. These are, I don't know, I say this every once in a while, but like there's a run of episodes that we'll kind of stumble upon where I'm like, damn, I could do this thing for fucking ever because these are hitting all the right notes for me. And yeah, we've been on a run and talking about two today that kind of hit those notes for me.
Yeah, for sure. We got sidetracked because we're already kind of topics of discussion. So let's get your business out of the way and whatever news and whatnot.
Yeah, okay. First of all, if you want to find this show on various forms of social media, there's a Turned Out of Punk Instagram page, a Turned Out of Punk Facebook page run by my brother, show producer Tristan Abraham. You can find me on various forms of social media at Left for Damien. If you would like to reach this show, Chris, how do they do that?
There is an email address to reach us at turnedoutapunk footnotes@gmail.com, spelled exactly as you would think.
And we're going to be dumping out that mailbag with a special mailbag episode very soon. So send in all your queries and concerns and recommendations on where to find nature burgers and whatnot.
Yeah, like I know we're like extremely neglectful as of late with that, but it is not intentional.
No.
And furthermore, if this is the period now, if you really want to send the things in that are going to get addressed in the next, say, month-ish, where we finally tackle it. So please do.
I think that handles that part of the show. And now the other unfortunate part of the show we have to normally get to off the top, which is acknowledging a passing. This is the time it's going to be the passing of Todd Youth, sadly. Todd Youth, of course, Warzone and Murphy's Law, but really someone who's played with a multitude of artists. Like he's someone who became kind of a musician's musician and went all over the world playing in different bands. And really, like, you go to his Discogs page and look at some of the records he played on. It's amazing.
Yeah. That happened a little while ago while we were in absence, but, yeah, it's sad. I think most people of your and I's sensibility certainly were sort of profoundly hit with that one. And you kind of see it like on social media, you saw sort of a very understandable, uniformly celebrated, a life celebration, if you will, of his work and what have you. And I think that's like could not be more deserved. But yeah, very sad.
Definitely. Played on Glenn Campbell's record.
Yeah, which is nuts. Like, that's the stuff you learned, unfortunately, in these kind of times, is stuff like that. But yeah, I wasn't even like, because as established by this show, I'm not a huge Danzig aficionado. I wasn't even aware he had anything to do with any of those Danzig lineups. And I was kind of shocked to learn that. Not really shocked, but it was surprised or whatever.
Yeah, and also played in Son of Sam with friend of the show, Davey Havoc, as well.
Oh, I didn't know that either. Yeah.
Yeah. No, He definitely played in, quite a few different bands over the years and someone who most recently playing in Fireburn.
Yeah.
This is a very, very unfortunate tragedy that kind of came out of the blue from what I've understood. So once again, rest in peace, Todd Youth, and thank you for the music. And I'm sure there's places to donate money to family online that you can look up and, people on social media are definitely talking about different events that have happened so far, tribute shows and things like that. So, if you get in support, in any way you can.
Yeah. Agreed.
And that's about, it, unfortunately, to the awkward transition part of the show. And now to something that, has been making waves on social media for completely different reasons, but that is this, Minor Threat reunion pick.
Yeah. I don't feel it's that, what you described it as, but yes, it's an interesting
photo. Well, it's a reunion in the sense that they're reuniting, like maybe not to play music, thank God, but.
Well, the actual, via the Discord, whatever you want to say, Instagram or whatever, the caption is something like they meet annually or so, or like frequently for.
Yeah, frequently.
It's trying to find the, I'm going to look it up right now. To actually quote it properly.
Yeah, they put an official statement. People are getting a little excited, a little nervous, a little.
You mean weird. They put up a statement after that saying it's not a reunited photo, like or a.
No, I think that was the first thing they put out, but like, just people have been freaking out nonetheless because of that.
Huh. Yeah, I'm gonna see right here because the caption was interesting the the way they worded it, because they worded it to not suggest that it's a reunion. Minor Threat tries to get together every few years. That's what it says, quote unquote, to catch up with each other. Photo was taken yesterday, as in, so that would have been the 16th of November, 2018. Porch is still looking great, although I have to admit that you and I graced that porch better than most, if I don't say so myself.
Yes, we did. We rocked although, that porch.
A million other people, including Tony Hawk recently, have also done it, but regardless. I don't know. I guess the question is, you're asking, does this mean it is a reunion?
No, I know. I know they're not playing music, thankfully, ever again, I don't think. Like, I think that from hanging out that day, you know, the infamous Turned Into Punk unrecorded episode that was the best episode ever with Ian MacKay that only you and I got to witness.
Yes.
You know, it was pretty abundantly clear that, you know, this is someone who, you know, like, has no ego trap in that regard. Like, he doesn't need to do that to fulfill some part of his life or, you know. Yeah, I think Fugazi could get back together. I honestly do think, and I've been joking about that, you know, a lot, but I think if Beto O'Rourke does win, there's a Fugazi reunion, 100%.
It's all on Beto, eh? It's all on Beto, yeah.
I think, I just think that would be something that they would be willing to get behind and do.
Yeah.
And I think Fugazi, it looks better than playing Fugazi songs than it does Minor Threat songs when I picture it in my head. And I am a much bigger Minor Threat fan, as it has been clearly well established on the show over the years. But
yes,
I would.
Yes, but I know what you're saying.
Yeah,
I know what you're saying. I never viewed Fugazi as actually like ending, if that makes sense. I just think it came and they were like, eh. And I could, like you, see it happening possibly at one point in time again.
Could you imagine Ian as like a grown adult running around on stage singing Guilty of Being White?
Probably not. Yeah.
That is not happening.
Yeah.
You know, Minor Threat. Like, he just seems to, like, you know, understand history too well to know how tacky that would look.
Yeah. Yeah. That's well stated, actually. I never thought of it in those terms. The other aspect of this that we're ignoring slightly is that, and it's not to say anybody who reforms or whatever is not like this, but these people seem to have artistic pursuits of their own at all times, so they don't perhaps yearn for, you know, doing the old thing as much as some other people would, right? So there's even a photo like 2 days earlier, sorry, I guess 5 days ago, previous to this, where it's him and Joe Lally and Amy. I don't know who Amy is. Is that his partner?
That's his partner, yeah.
Okay, I didn't know if that was... Anyway, they have some seemingly new group.
Yeah, they played the day after we played DC.
Yeah, so, you know, there are things always happening, so the need to, you know, dig up the old stuff is not as, pertinent sometimes. I'm with you, though. I do think Beto O'Rourke could reunite Fugazi.
Yeah, I see that happening. Like, you know, and it's... I don't know, like, Minor Threat's like the one that I think out of all of them would just feel so weird getting back together. Like, it would feel really, like, it would feel like walking in on your parents having sex or, like, it would just feel so gross, I think.
Yeah, I think we need to also state very explicitly right now that why we feel this way is not because we have a problem with this. It's because I revere it to such a high regard that I would personally, selfishly at this point, like to never see it happen.
Yeah, like that's what I'm saying. I thought the photo was cool as shit, and it made me feel really warm inside to know that these people can still like hang out together.
Yes.
And you know, and have a sense of humor enough about themselves to take this photo. And we saw that there's other photos from over the years too, where they've done the same thing.
Yeah.
I think there's some on the internet like that too. And it's like, yeah, like I have no problem with the photo, but I think it's the problem is thinking about it as like them playing music again, which I think I would be fucking shocked. I would be so shocked if that ever happened.
Yeah. Agreed. Same.
That's like the one.
I think it's funny that they replaced, I just noticed this now, they replaced the certain soft drink company's box with, it looks like a tuner.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like if you look at the photo again, Well, I'm sure there's a bunch of other little subtleties that are different, but yeah, that's the one thing I just noticed right now. So clearly they don't have that still kicking around the house, surprisingly.
Probably someone stole that.
Well, I don't know if that was on the porch. They brought out the board, though, which is neat.
Mm.
The board is there, like, so they propped the board as the photo.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. That's which cool. You've infamously held in your hands. I don't think I picked it up.
No, yeah, you know, you took a photo, right?
I took a photo, but I don't think I held it. That's a big old ass board. I forgot to ask him what board, like whose board that is. I don't remember whose board that is.
I thought he told us.
Yeah, he might have. I may have forgotten. Anyway, we're humble bragging right now. So yeah. What the other, I guess, thing, if we're good on this topic, I'd like
we're to... We're good on this topic. This is a topic that I'm sure will probably wind up coming up again at some point.
Yeah. I just, final thoughts, no reunion. I don't think it's ever happening. I'm kind of happy about it. They're the best regardless.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Sidebar, speaking of like legendary, whatever, punk hardcore groups or what have you. The other thing I wanted to mention, because I'd seen them on a late night show recently and it was very good, and I have not read it, and I'm curious if you have read it, but the Beastie Boys book is making the rounds.
I was given a copy by someone very kindly while on tour, and so I have started reading it, and it is – I don't have like the big version. It's like the review version.
Yeah.
And it is awesome. I wish this person wrote their name in it, because I really want to give them a thank you for this, because it was such a good gift to get on tour. We're really in early into the tour. But it is an awesome, awesome book.
Yeah. Whoever you are.
Oh, Jeff.
Jeff.
Yeah, Jeff in Boston. Shout out to Jeff in Boston.
I wasn't there, but I'd like to thank you on behalf of Damien, if Damien doesn't thank you himself.
Dude, there's like just so much weird random stuff in it too, like just stuff about like weird, you know, clock DVA and like, I don't know, just like there's a bunch of cool stuff to read them talking about and them being into, you know, early on. And it's a gorgeous book.
Like, yeah, it looks amazing. I've seen some people like, you know, kind of like posting about it, whatever, but I just think like, there's no way this won't be amazing. It just, they were, their late night appearance that I saw was really great. And just even the photos in it, what I'm just like scanning through right now just looks incredible. So I'm anticipating getting it and reading it. I have not acquired it yet, but, of course you have it.
Well, I was given a promo copy.
Agreed. Yeah.
Of the proof copy and stuff, but it's fantastic. It's so great. So Jeff, I appreciate it so much, man. It was great to see you again, and thank you for the book.
Yeah. Cool.
But yeah, no, definitely pick that up. I got to show you this book, the Dead from Mayhem's Archives, the Death Archives.
I don't have that. I know the book you're speaking of, though, yeah.
Thurston Moore just put it out with a static piece. There's like a really cool imprint. I'm reading a Great Damn book right now as well. At the same time, reading the Beastie Boys book. It's a great time for punk books. Like there's that, of course, the Toronto Tomorrow is Too Late book that's sold out, came out
officially.
And sold. Yeah, they're doing another print run of Urban Styles, which is the unbelievable book Tony did when he came on the podcast about the connection between hip hop and graffiti and punk, mainly punk and graffiti, hardcore and graffiti. It's great. Holidays are coming. So support your local bookshop and order some of these books and buy them for your friends and family.
Yeah.
Also, you know what? I also got the reissue finally of the Capital Punishment record.
I do not have that either. Nice. Where'd you get, like, you scored it in a store or you got it as a gift?
I got it as a gift from our friend Dave Martin. So thank you very much.
Oh, yes.
But it is very cool to finally hear the Ben Stiller punk record on vinyl. And it's a beautiful reissue. Available now on Captured Tracks. A record that was kind of like discovered by Mike Sniper. So there's a really cool story. Mike Sniper, of course, owns Captured Tracks and goes through the whole story about, you know, finding this record at a sale. It involves, you know, Kill by Death mastermind Johan Kugelberg as well. So it's got all the key players involved, Chris.
Yeah. Nice. I like the sounds of it. I remember when they were doing little promo stuff that I'd seen, but I'd still yet to hear it. So I got to get on that.
Yeah, the liner notes make it pretty clear that I don't know how deep Ben went as a head.
Like, well, we'll find out when you interview him.
Yeah, hopefully that happens. Yeah. But I would not be surprised if he's like, I don't know how deep I go. Yeah, which hasn't stopped me in the past, you know. I can bleed punk blood from a stone.
It's true. But yeah, I think that's it for news. I'm glad Dave Martin brought you that, though. Dave is the best.
Shout Dave out is to the Dave. Fucking best. Dave Martin is the best. Yeah. Shout out to Dave Martin.
Yeah,
one of the greatest human beings. You know, it was funny afterwards. Like, I was thinking, we're talking in the fucked up van, and we're like, how many people are there that all of us like? It's just like Dave Martin.
You can tell by my laughter on that that is a very true statement.
Yeah, like it's a band that doesn't agree on much, you know, but we all think that Dave is probably the nicest human being on earth.
Yeah, he's great.
He also would be a good manager. I was like, Tim, I'm like, you'd be a great manager because you understand what it's like to be in a band.
Yes.
And you love music, which is put you a couple beats ahead of a lot of managers I've met.
Yeah. But at the same time, like you did say, as we've expressed, like you like Dave Martin, right? So why would you put him through that? Dave?
Oh, I would never want him to be fucked up's manager. Yes. I want him to live a long, happy life. I don't want to subject him to that.
Anyway, that was my joke. Slightly serious, but a joke.
100% real.
Though. In jest.
Truth in jest, Chris. Truth in jest. Let's dive.
Yo, sidebar, because you, yes. I feel like when you mention it, it comes off different. I just want to say again, your new record is great. Oh, if people have not heard it or are not vibing it, that's fine. It's not, you know, I get that certain people don't like certain things. That's all good. But I've seen from a lot of like very credible people that are also feeling it, and I think it's like really resonating with the people it needs to. So if you have not heard it and you have a mild interest, even, I suggest you go get it. And that's my shameless plug because I think it's a really great record. And yeah. That's
and I will plug because I'm not playing. I appreciate that. Thank you very much, Chris. But I will plug because I don't play on it. Check out that Raise Your Voice Joyce comp.
Yeah.
That Jonah did with a bunch of amazing songwriters, women songwriters in England. And it's fucking awesome.
Yeah. And also I think it's the track title, but there's something, I think it's either the song or perhaps the band or fake band name, because I can't remember how you guys did it, but something's called the Black Cardigans. And I was like, that's the dopest fucking song title or band name I've heard in a long time.
There's also that song Bastia.
I haven't heard it all. I have my tentacles out. I have one. It's coming to me from far away at some point, but yeah, I don't have it yet or anything.
That song by Bastia, I would love to hear a whole record by that band because it is fucking awesome.
Yeah, very cool.
But I don't play on it, so I can plug that guilt-free.
Anyway, let's begin.
Let's begin on the show. We got two episodes to get into, two vastly different episodes, but two episodes that really kind of, two people that played huge roles in developing my life, unknowingly, clearly, as you can hear from both their reactions on the show, but two people that I think are unbelievably cool to get to talk about, especially because, once again, two people that have very little in common other than the fact that they both identified with punk music at one point in their life. And I guess first we're going to talk about Jesse Brown and then Chris Dodge.
Yeah, sure, whatever.
So Jesse Brown, founder of Canada Land, slayer of media Goliaths, also not beloved by a lot of people in media too sometimes, controversial among people in media, but like no doubt Canalan is serving an amazing public service and has had a lot of success, you know, like an unbelievable amount of success as a podcast, as a platform, and really like one of the few kind of like free media type, like, I mean, like free as in completely open type media outlets that's kind of popped up in the last few years. They've taken on some big challengers, right now to kind of get the truth out there. And yeah, Jesse, though, for me, will forever be the editor of Punch newspaper, a key pickup for me as a young person in helping steer me on my path to where I am today. And Chris, I know from talking to you, this did not get outside of Toronto, really.
No, it didn't. And this is a strange one because these kind of things are my bread and butter, I feel. And somehow this is a huge blind spot for me. But I don't remember this, and I don't know if it's because its reach didn't get to my region. I'm not that far out of Toronto, but I guess I'm far enough. Although I was still hearing things like CIUT and stuff like that. So it's kind of bizarre that of all the things, this didn't sort of get further, especially in like that, the 90s era of like, you know, quote unquote, like zine culture being at its height. And there was definitely independent outlets here that carried stuff from out of town. But I am not like hearing the stories of what you speak of in this episode. I was not aware of it intimately though. I never picked up an issue that I could think of, or any of that. And it's very weird because there's a lot of the other stuff that comes up like in conjunction with it, like I vividly remember or like picked up or still have. But yeah, this is one that for some reason, I don't know if it was just somehow regional in that sense where it didn't have any reach. But yeah, either way, it's cool and I feel I missed out. But yeah, I didn't have any intimate familiarity with it myself. But I can tell by your... your reverence for it that it was very important, and I see why.
Yeah, like I think it was super cool that here's this guy, you know, fired from his school newspaper, going out there and basically setting up a rebel newspaper. And I think he probably didn't get distroed outside of Toronto because I imagine he was distroing himself. Like I couldn't see like, you know, like Outside Music, who I think did Vice for a while, or you know, like one of these distribution companies picking up the magazine and sending it out to record stores. Like, I think it was probably just him going around and his friends going around, dropping it off at record stores and different places. I remember there was like Watch magazine, which Jesse also used to work for a minute. He was telling me, which do you remember Watch? Did that?
No, those, like, I mean, again, perhaps if someone showed me, like, I don't know, the letterhead or whatever on some of this stuff, maybe it would trigger something. But by name, no. But the weird thing is, again, like, obviously it's sort of a you know, when you're talking about the era of Vice that or he is or you are, yeah, whatever, yeah, gets brought up. Like, I vividly remember that. And we were getting that. Now, they were a more of a giant beast even then. But
yeah.
But yeah, like stuff like that. Even like the kind of indie comic world he talks about, or like the... that stuff is like, yeah, that was all hitting. And I like the Beguiling he dropped, I think, in it, or you did.
Yeah.
That's one like
Rat Boy. Like,
yeah, exactly. Rat Boy. And to me, that kind of reminds me of like, Exclaim always entertained that. I don't know if it was just that early era of Exclaim. For listeners, Exclaim, I would assume you know what it is, but if not, it's a national, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. It's Canada's, yeah, I think, only at this point, certainly national. Yeah.
It's a like
music publication.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so, and it's free. It's free. But they used to have, I think they used to have either like a whole comic section or something. I remember more comics in it.
Yeah, definitely. I remember they also used to have, I think they, Tony Ratboy Walsh did the cover for them one time too.
Yeah. So there was that, I remember, like that aesthetic I can picture even when you bring up the name. But for whatever reason, these other things I didn't have any, again, familiarity with, but it's cool. Like everything being referenced and what you're talking about, like brought me back to like, you know, the early 90s and like fondly thinking of things like that.
Yeah, no, it definitely, cool. It was, I remember picking that up, Vice, Watch, all kind of around the same time. Exclaim. Actually, I think I had Exclaim earlier, a little bit earlier than the other ones, but,
yeah,
those were, you know, just at the time when the information was like, information costs money. Now information is pretty much free. Yeah. As long as you can pay for the access.
Yeah, exactly. It's free because we're all a part of the machine now. But yeah.
Yeah. No, exactly. But it's like, but it's at that point, like, information costs money. So anytime you got a free publication, especially when talking about punk,
yeah,
which was happening more and more at that time, like, I'd pick it up and just like fiend over it. And this was like his magazine. Was even better because it was kind of punk. Like, it wasn't as punk as Vice was.
Yeah.
But it also was like, fuck you about schools and teachers and principals, yeah, and places in Toronto that I knew. And it was like, wow. Even though now I like, you know, respect the long suffering work of teachers, you know,
Yes. I know what you're saying, though. Like, when you're that age, it's a perfect, it's perfect to get something like that. And that's one thing in my area that we never had anything like that. We had like zine, mini zine stuff, but never things that were like organized and like talking about, you know, school system issues or things like that. It would just be your typical sort of whatever teen, preteen rants about being frustrated with school or something. Not quite as whatever, insightful.
Well, we shouldn't have either, right? Like, I think that's the amazing thing about what Jesse did is like, it was like a glitch in the matrix. Like, you're not supposed to speak out like this as a young person. Now it's different, I guess, because social media, everyone can has a platform to kind of do this. But at that time, you were not supposed to speak out like this.
Well, I think even like when he's talking about his, you know, like the exposing those certain stories early on and like really catching heat for it. Like you can tell that it resonated to a level that you would not expect of a high school, you know, quote unquote, zine or paper or whatever.
Yeah. And I think that's why it's like amazing. That's why I love this episode, is to hear his journey where he like walked away from it. It's like, dude, this is what you were meant to do. This is what you were born to do. And it like, you know, and to hear that it like he resisted it for a long time, but still there's no escape. That's why they call it fate. You can't get away from it.
Yes, but I also think that part of the journey when he discusses that and school and going away to Montreal specifically, that paints a picture for people who do not live in this region.
Oh, yeah.
For international listeners, if you really wanted a real glimpse into like especially 90s or even early 2000s, but late 90s, like a glimpse into the life of, you know, Canadian, you know, young adults, you know, entering adulthood perhaps or whatever, that are on the journey for subculture or interested in subculture in some capacity. Like that is there are typically two journeys for Eastern Canadians, I should say, East Coast, not Halifax, but this area. And it's that journey. And then the other one is the out West journey. Right. But that one, everything about his story, I'm like, I knew people that did that. And, you know, I know exactly what he's talking about.
Yeah. If you were a hippie, you went out West. If you're a hipster or a proto hipster, you went out East.
Yeah. That's well stated. I never thought about it in those terms, but yeah, that works.
Yeah. That tracks. It seems like that was definitely like the move at the time. I definitely remember that.
Yeah.
Very well. Yeah. What he's describing, as you say, is like, that was a lot of our friends made that trek, and it was the proto hipster kind of era. And it was like running away and joining the circus of the time, which was like running away to join Vice in Montreal. Not Vice necessarily, but like whatever, like go to Montreal to go to Carlton to make movies.
Yeah. Because those things were what was bubbling up in the culture, quote unquote, at this time were things like that. Right. And if you think about the hotbed of that whole area, you know what I mean? And you think about from the early 2000s to mid 2000s, what sort of comes about, it's, you know, yeah, it makes complete sense what was people going there and doing things at that time. Not to say it doesn't exist now, but it was definitely very, very vibrant. And so his tale of that is like, yeah, I immediately identified with it. I never did that, but yeah, I know it.
Well, I think there was also political and economic factors. Like,
yeah,
a lot of people left Quebec during the 90s. Not a lot, but there were people that left Quebec during the 90s. So rents were pretty cheap.
Yeah.
And you could go to these schools and live out this kind of like fantasy life for a little bit. And I don't think it's as cheap anymore.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, like, I don't know. But yeah, I think that's accurate. I just think that part for people that don't live here, I think was very, very he did a good job of explaining he's very articulate with his, you know, explaining his situation. So I thought it painted a very accurate picture of the time and being a person of that age and what you did.
Well, and his was even more perfect because, you know, he ran away and joined Vice, which is like, you know, the thing that, you know, I think everyone fantasized about doing. But then Vice moved to New York, but like he was there at the beginning of.
Yeah, I think the quote unquote beginning, well, I guess at first you would just say magazine, are extremely interesting. And I think if you isolate that time, I think it's it's fair to discuss and think about and revere. But yes, it all gets a little different now.
It's yeah. And then I think it was also awesome you talked about pranks.
Yeah, that was the other thing. Like the stuff that really really colored the picture for me of that episode was the indie. Well, I don't know if you'd call it indie, but you know what I mean. Quote unquote independent comics like the Hate Thing or 8-Ball or
yeah.
The research and prank stuff was great too. Like that, all that stuff. I was like, you know, we always reminisce, and you and I are the kind of people that always reminisce about this sort of thing because it's, you know, times are just much different, and people like you and I feel live in this kind of esoteric kind of stuff or whatever. But like, yeah, like that, I don't know what exists like that now. And so I always, you know, guiltily, you know, fetishize it in hindsight. And yeah, but I do miss it. And those things that he was touching on, especially the comics thing, because I think now, I don't know how many people like really are like not thinking of like, you know, Marvel Comics movies and how much that's infiltrated culture, which is true. But I mean like that sort of, you know, Daniel Clowes, like you mentioned, like stuff like that. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I don't know what that world does now. I feel like that world is the same as like the quote unquote like indie movie world, which I feel like exists, but is very, very
unto itself.
Yeah. And it's almost like has like, only the appeal to the very, very finite people that do. And even people like myself have trouble keeping up with it, or, you know, it doesn't have that, you know, in the era we're discussing, it eventually reaches out pretty far, but then it kind of retracts again. So I just thought all that was great. I don't know. I just thought it was a great, I don't know, speaking as, you know, I just related to a lot of it.
Yeah, definitely. I feel the same way. I think this was a very relatable episode for myself in the same way, because like, I don't know, it was such a, especially like that time in my life was such an amazing beginning point of discovery. But like right up until like, you know, getting into that research pranks book, finding out about all these people, all these artists, all these like, you know, thinkers, all these, you know, not so great people in some cases, but like, you know, finding out about all this stuff, like, It was so exciting for me, you know, and like it definitely, that's a different time, you know, it's like,
yeah,
everything's known, but nothing's known at the same time anymore.
Well, I think that what I like about this era, thinking back in hindsight, as someone who didn't live in any hotbed area or wasn't from a big city, the thing that I think is cool as far as the innocence of looking back on it, being young, is that it just didn't seem to be commodified in the same way that everything is now.
Yeah.
Which what I like to, you know, and I'm not just saying that as a purist to say everything's wrong now. That's not what I mean. I just mean there was a genuine innocence to like it being sort of a new frontier, in the sense of you didn't really know, at least I felt like you didn't know where it was going, or you didn't, it wasn't like the sort of the rules of it were never, you know, completely defined, which I think is what probably was its undoing for a lot of it eventually.
Yep,
but
yep.
But I don't know if that exists now. Like, I'm sure it does. As an older person now, I can't speak on behalf of youth culture officially, but you know, I just think like that's my era. So that's what I can, you know, observe. But I presently in life don't experience things like that as much. And it bums me out a little bit, to be honest, because I miss that. Not that I yearn for the 90s really, but you know what I mean? Like it was a good time for like learning these things. I miss the innocence of experiencing things where you find it out and it just like blows your mind. That's the stuff I yearn for.
Same here. Same here. Well, we're going to move on, but not very far, because we're going to be talking about the 90s as well with this next one.
Yeah, the other part of the 90s.
The other part of the 90s. We got to talk about this next episode because holy fuck, there's a lot to get into for this thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Chris Dodge, founder of Slap-A-Ham, a member of Spaz, member of Trappist, member of Despise You, member of Infest, and member of No Use for a Name, very reluctantly from the sounds of it, and Sticky as well. Chris is someone who, you know, I say it here, I've always kind of like looked at Spaz as being like the Beastie Boys of hardcore, even though, you know, obviously the Beastie Boys were a hardcore band at one point, but in the sense that they just like, just were cool, like authentically cool and into all the cool shit, but like not because it was cool, just because that's what they were into. And yeah, like I'm so excited to have them on the show.
Yeah, I thought that exactly what you just said, you more or less said in the interview, and I mirror your sentiments. I also think, and it's weird because I think now the idea of Spaz as a group has a different, in hindsight, it's treated them differently. I think it's actually treated them with a bit of a disservice, if I'm being completely honest, because I think at the time they were taste-making stuff that I don't feel that kind of power violence thing gets like credit for nowadays, mm-hmm. specifically them. Like, I think power violence is such like a, I don't know, it's like almost like its own animal, so people sort of treat it in that way where it doesn't it sort of doesn't affect the other aspects of whatever this music and culture is, so to speak. Whereas I think in those years, certainly at its, you know, it's an inception and via Spaz, I think they were taste making way more. I was actually thinking there was two things in hindsight I wish had happened, and maybe they did and I forgot about it, or I dreamt it and wish they did. But one was Spaz is a band I could have seen being featured in the Grand Royal magazine.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they ever were. I'm assuming they were not, but you mentioned the Beastie Boys thing. That's the first thing that came to my mind, is like, I could have totally seen an interview with Spaz and talking about like Kung Fu movies or something like that. That would have made perfect sense.
It was kind of just before though, Spaz would have shown up on the radar.
Exactly. Yeah. But I think like what I'm trying to suggest is like, there are things now that we take for granted. Like, you know, like Wu-Tang is like a household name now, for example. Right. But in these years, like, and again, this is a sort of redundant point, but I'm going to state it nonetheless. Like, yes, if you were wearing like Wu-Tang stuff in this era, which I believe, I can't remember what stuff they always repped. I don't know if they were like the Wu-Tang t-shirt wearing people or whatever. But
they were, yeah, definitely Ebro too.
Yeah, Ebro definitely was. And I knew like people that were new in that era. And it's funny, I had a conversation about this last night with another one of your previous guests. But yeah, it's just like, that sort of thing you take for granted now because things are sort of the way they are. But like, that was like a really, you know, not that Wu-Tang weren't popular, but it wasn't a like, wasn't cool to a lot of people, you know what I mean? To like do that and to like rep that kind of stuff. And so for that group, like for Spaz, the stuff that they were kind of like he was mentioning, and some of it is just kind of absurd, you know, like lyrically, but I do think like there are things I could see. I could see them easily having been in Grand Royal, and I could have seen them easily like Supreme doing like a Spaz something. So yeah. Whatever.
That would
like,
be a little ahead, a couple years ahead of Supreme doing that.
Yeah, I could still see that happening now.
Yeah.
I could see Supreme like making a guitar, like that's the same guitar as whatever one of them played.
Yeah.
And it's like the Spaz guitar and it's red and it has the Supreme. You know what I mean? Like that's the level of, you know, quote unquote, like the hallmark that I feel that this group had in that period.
Yeah. They definitely, it's like amazing to think about how many things they were kind of like on the pulse of, but like even like weird places they showed up, right? Like they're on the Gummo soundtrack.
Yeah.
They're like the Cool Keith thing, which is, definitely, you know, Dan from Spaz has written about that extensively. You can see that online. I think I even asked Cool Keith about it one time when I when I interviewed him on The Wedge.
Yeah, how'd that go?
he had very little memory of them. but yeah, I remember talking to them about it back in the day even. Like it seems like that would – like it's funny because like a lot of people reacted when I posted that – you know, just in reference, I thought that was so common knowledge. But yeah. All these people were like, what?
Well, I think it's you're dealing with two things where that, like, that's another figure that I think, you know, history has done a slight disservice to. I think like
yeah.
Cool Keith is like, especially of a certain era, like is, you know, was a big deal. I still think is. I still think it's like a major cult following. Like if I'm being perfectly honest, I think like Cool Keith is bizarre, like the new Blowfly. Like that's the level I think of like the cult status that he is. And it's funny these things that I don't know why certain things didn't resonate. But yeah, the fact that these two collaborated at all is amazing. And yeah, I wasn't, until speaking to you recently, like I never knew about that either. I never thought about it or knew about it.
It's also funny, like, you know, they did the 25 to Life split.
Yeah.
They're on the Fat Records comp.
Mm-hmm. That story was amazing, by the way.
Amazing.
That whole, this is the idea of that is hilarious. Like the idea, just like taking it.
Yeah.
I also like,
but that, like when he said that, like I could hear Fat Mike saying it, cause it sounds like,
yeah,
conversations I've had with him.
Exactly. I'll put it to you this way. There are recent conversations that have come up on the show, namely this one, that deserves like another part of a Fat Mike.
Oh yeah, dude.
Because some things have come to light.
Yeah. Like I'm sitting here looking at a copy of the fucking Fat Records letter. Right, that they denied the existence of.
Yes. I just want to say, of course you are.
Yeah. We are a punk rock label. We're not interested in your dumb ass metal pop, new wave, funky rap, industrial, Nirvana, wannabe, garage, college rock, etc. Why don't you try some major?
That's the farting line.
Yeah. that's one of them. That's one of the options. Here's another one. You fucking suck. Don't ever send us any more. Sorry, this is not the best scan of this. Any more of your tape because it's a waste of time. Go back to working at McDonald's. Maybe someday you'll be the fry guy.
Wow. That one's harsh.
Yeah. The person who sent me this letter got, you guys are pretty good. We're not interested in putting out anything now, but keep in touch and send us any new material in the future.
Wow. That was really diplomatic, actually.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the better options.
Well, I wonder, like, the idea of those letters, like, because that one, that other one, the middle one, was very harsh. So it's like, I wonder if they actually had, like, people listening to it and deciding, or it was just random.
Yeah, well, this was signed.
It seems like that middle one's pretty harsh.
Oh, yeah, no, there's definitely some harsh. Don't hate them. they were not, they, you know, Fat Mike, not known for being the nicest guy sometimes. I've had good times with him.
You know. Regardless, we digress. We're talking about Mr. Chris Dodge.
Yes, we are talking about Mr. Chris Dodge. But that's the thing about Chris Dodge is like, we can go to so many places when we talk about him.
Yeah, so the one thing really quick I wanted to acknowledge, which you kind of talked about at the beginning and sort of addresses the label thing real quick, but I thought it was hilarious that he was talking about the first record promoted was that No Use for a Name when he started working there. I
think so awesome.
Yeah, really, really funny. Also, I don't know what is going on with the cover art for that record. Very strange still.
With the person in the refrigerator?
Yeah, it's just weird. Like I remember at the time those records were coming out, and the one thing I was impressed with is they looked so like professional.
Yeah,
like, they looked really good, but like the actual like art, and this isn't like it's not executed poorly. It just this is like I'm just like what? Like this is the standing image of your record going forward. Like it just seems bizarre to me. That's always my thoughts on that record. And I remember that record being really blah. I probably still have it. I bought it at the time and just thinking like, oh, okay. And then I heard that earlier stuff, which I like much more.
Yeah, like you're right. That is, it looks like a random skateboard graphic at the time, maybe.
Yeah, it seems really, and because it's like, what's it called? Lesha Concarne or something?
Yeah.
It's just like, I don't get it. Like, I don't know. Maybe I wasn't supposed to, or maybe it's supposed to make no sense, but.
Is Lesha Concarne like milk meat?
I don't know, man. I'm not bilingual. I can't tell you.
Yeah, we are in Canada. I don't have Spanish in school. Well, I didn't have Spanish in school. Maybe there probably are Spanish classes in school.
I'm just looking it up again. Man.
Translation. Here it is. Milk and meat.
Okay. Then I guess it makes sense. Maybe that's why to me it doesn't. But it's just like, I don't know. And even like the back of it, like that guy poking out of the, it does look like a skateboard graphic.
Yeah.
But like, what is the dude? Is it like a reptile guy? Like
it's what? It's like a, I don't know. It's like, yeah, what is that going on there?
And then it's supposed to be like a sewer grate as like the image. I don't know. I'm being way too critical right now. I just think it was. I just
you're right. It is a weird cover, though. It is definitely pretty weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. Incognito is a weird cover too.
I'd have to look. I kind of like that came. Admittedly, I gave up on that band after that.
No, Incognito's the
oh, first sorry, record. The early one. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, it's not bad though. That should be a Turbo cover, but other than that, yeah, I don't mind that.
Don't miss the train.
The one I was thinking of was the Daily Grind one, but even that's kind of like corny.
I wonder if that thing is meant to be there's not a great drawing on the cover of the
cover.
Don't miss the train. Oh, but like, you know what? It's like all their album covers lead into each other.
Yeah.
Right. Like, so you look on Don't Miss the Train and it's the guy's reading the newspaper with the eyeballs popping out of it. And then if you look on the back cover, there's that weird thing that lives in the refrigerator with skeleton hands.
Yeah.
And then.
So it's like they're like Iron Maiden Eddie, you know, like their guy.
Yeah. Like he's skanking on the cover of Daily Grind.
Yeah, it's true. So he's like, so we've established he's a really uninteresting Eddie somehow, I guess, Southern Californian or Bay Area.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, and I would still put them light years ahead of Unwritten Law's art.
Oh, God. Yes, we've established that already. Anyway, yeah. I just thought the cover's weird. Daily Grind's okay. That cover makes sense. Just Leshika Karnai, I just always remember thinking, like, I don't get this. Like, the cover is strange to me.
It's very strange.
Like, actually, it should not just the cover. The art direction as a whole, I don't really get.
But. Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't look terrible. It's not poorly executed. It's just like, I don't get it. Like, why would you do this? And it didn't, like, the rest of the record doesn't really, you know, speak to it either. That's what I was confused about. That's all.
No, their best graphic design, 100%, is that first 7-inch, which has the Mad Magazine kind of rip-off art. And then Let 'Em Out, the Slapham record.
Yeah, for sure.
100%. That looks, like, way better than a lot of their other records, but they've got the guy. They got the guy from the cover of that one record already on their. Oh, it's a bootleg, man. This is a bootleg of the first 7-inch. Weird. There's a bootleg of the first 7-inch.
Uh-oh, Damien has found something.
Yeah, I gotta try and track that down at some point.
Yeah, essentially they have a mascot that we didn't even realize they had, which again is strange.
It's also funny that no one from the band, like who would go on, maybe one member of the original band is in the last lineup. They're like Career Suicide. Tony Sly was on the 7-inch. Sorry.
What I wanted is when is, Fucked Up doing a Live and a Dive?
Fat Mike, you know, when he told me like, we're supposed to do a split with NoFX one time. And then he's like, yeah, your songs are too long. We decided to do it with a band with better, shorter songs. So we're doing it with the Spits instead.
Oh, very funny.
Yeah. What a fucking asshole. Just kidding.
I would just like to say 2005's No Use for a Name record. Keep them confused. Yes, I agree. It has been confusing.
What's the whole time. I gotta see that one.
It's a terrible cover. It's just like,
yeah, there's some like not great covers.
But I just mean like they call the record Keep Them Confused. And yes, if I look at your catalog, I'm confused. I'm not trying to like, you know, take you to task here.
And not to speak ill of the dead either.
No, exactly. They're very confusing, this band, to me. I've always never had a sense of what they really are or like what they're about. I don't really. Yeah. So yeah. Anyway, on to other things, if we will.
Yes.
So Slapham, I'm trying to think of the first Slapham thing I ever got.
That's a good one. I'm trying to think actually now too. The first Slapham record I got.
I definitely never got any of the super crucial stuff first. That's a given. But
I was probably a Capcast 7-inch or something.
I don't think I got a record first. I feel like I got a CD, and it was like way after the fact. Not way after the fact, but definitely like not. I'm just looking over. I definitely bought Fiesta Comes Alive, but I don't know if that was the first one I bought. I'm just trying to remember the years on these. I'm trying to think of if I got them when they came out.
Damn, dude, what a run though.
because definitely like Fuck on the Beach, that comp, and then that Burning Witch I have.
Yep.
And I don't know if I got that in 98. Maybe I did. But I have an original of that, so it must have been. I don't know. It wasn't that. It was an expensive record for a minute. Arguably still is. I don't know. Or whatever.
Oh, I think I have the Hell Nation War with Emo 5-inch.
Anyway, it was either. It could have been the Spaz, the last Spaz LP, but I feel like I must have got. Because how would I have got? I already knew of Spaz. I don't know. Anyway, it was in that era. That like 97, 98 era, that's the first thing I got would have been in that pocket. Somewhere between 97, 99, I can't remember which one. And then they got other ones subsequently later, like some, I actually don't have a lot of the Crucial ones still, because either the price or just the fact that I haven't. I've tried, actually recently almost scored that Infest Split, the first one, first release.
Yeah, I want that. I don't have that.
And you don't have that?
No.
Wow.
I know. It's the only Piss Happy Children record I don't have.
But the Neanderthal has been a big want of mine for many, many a year, and I still do not have it. The Crossed Out as well. But Crossed Out, No Comment, and the Neanderthal are my top three from this that I really want that I don't have.
The ones I need are definitely the first two, the Melvins and the other one. I've got the Neanderthal, got a News for a Name, got Sticky, got Bliarg, Kafkaz, Crossed Out, like No Comment, what a run.
Yeah.
Stuff like and then the one that's like low key never gets talked about, but it's fucking killer, is that Monastery and Anarchus.
Yeah. Split. I've never heard this. Never heard it.
Oh, it's fucking incredible. Monastery is like a Entombed side project.
Oh, nice.
The other band's a Mexican death metal band.
Nice. It looks incredible.
A grindy kind of band.
Yeah.
Good looking. Yeah. It's nuts. Like through like Chris Dodge and like putting out these records, like look at like for aggressive music, like all the bases that are covered there.
Yeah, and they always had an interesting aesthetic. I think that weird dog cat image is a little weird, but I like the.
Yeah, that is a really weird look.
I've always thought that's weird, but I like the slap a ham like bar logo thing. It looks cool.
Yeah.
And just the way the font is or whatever. Like, they always had a cool, like, I don't know. I like labels that can do that, can establish an aesthetic, and you see it sort of, you know, throughout the run. And that's one thing this label, like, once you kind of tune in on it, I remember the same thing, like thinking like, okay, yo, like I need to try and get some of this stuff, which I admittedly still don't have most of it. But the, I think the only one I had, the earliest one, I'm trying to think of what the earliest one I have is. I think it's the weird one. It's like I Abhor Her. I think it's my early, oh, I might have that Rupture. Actually, now that I think about it.
That Rupture is incredible.
And maybe one of those capitalist records. I can't remember. But yeah. Okay. So I have a few of the, and I must have that Spaz 7-inch actually.
I want to get a complete run of this label. This would be a fun label to try and collect everything. Not all the versions, obviously, because that would make you mad. Yeah. But I need that Gob Wink Martindale split still.
What is that? Is that the Gob? Like,
no, that's the other Gob that beefed with the Toronto Gob. I think this Gob was from Arizona, Reno, Nevada. Sorry,
that's so weird that there are two Gobs.
Yeah, and they and they were like, and the Gob, you know, they made the Gob from the States made fun of the Canadian Gob, so the Canadian Gob challenged them to a hockey game or something ridiculous. Oh yeah, I think this is the Gob that actually ran the Satan's Pimp label.
Oh, weird.
Which put in a lot of power violence stuff.
So let's because you are a connoisseur of this and you talk to about it a lot, this label, I want you to give I suppose the top five might be easy, but for listeners who are new, who do not know where to begin, where would you steer them on 5 releases of this label?
It's kind
of
really
assuming they had money to buy it all and whatever.
Yeah, like if you're going for the Palamon stuff, like, you know, like it would be that Neanderthal, the first Capitalist Casualties or the second Capitalist Casualties, even crossed out. You know, that Spaz record, that Rupture record. And man, like, yeah, but then if I was just going to go like overall, I'd say that I Hate God 13 split. I would also put in the, that Fu Manchu record, that Melvin's Flipper covers record is pretty ridiculous for me.
I feel like the Melvins ones, like, it's so cool they did it, but I feel like you kind of got to isolate it off. Because the Melvins are such their own planet that it doesn't need, like, it's obvious it's so cool that this happened. Like, I feel like it doesn't, you know what I mean? It doesn't detract from the label at all, but it also doesn't help it in the sense where it doesn't really.
Yeah.
They're such their own planet that it's like they are larger than Slap a Ham, arguably. But
yeah.
I just mean, like, it's such a bigger thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I know what you're saying, but I think for me, I think it's cool because it, like, it's what links. What would be your picks for the best records on this label?
Well, I kind of, and kind of name Neanderthal is the always one I think of first. Like, that's the one that always, like, when someone says this label, the first thing that comes to my head is the cover of that Neanderthal record. So it's probably my, but it's also because it's been a major want of mine. So I can't tell if it's that or it's just is legitimately my favorite. But yeah, so I'm going to say that. Then I'm going to say the Crossed Out, the 9th release. The No Comment, the 11th release. What's that? What am I at? 3 now?
Yeah.
Then I'm going to say... Ooh, it gets tough from here because there's a few... I guess obligatorily I'm going to say the Spaz like you did for 16 because that sort of has to be said, I believe.
Yeah, like I don't even think the Spaz first 7-inch is the best Spaz record, but like,
no, yeah,
it's kind of like so iconic.
Yeah,
that label.
And that's 4, and for the 5th one, I'm just gonna that 13th I Hate God is a great vibe, but I'm not going to name that. I'm just trying to go down. I'm going to try and pick a later one. You know what? I'm going to go way. Kind of posery cornball on this, although it's not possible with this label, arguably, but I'm going to pick the Fiesta comp because I think the Fiesta comp is one that you will come across all the time. And if you were to think of an era, whether you were happy or annoyed, mm-hmm. that is a record that encompasses this too. So that's going to be my 5th one, number 40.
Yeah, I think now you got me thinking about like late era records. I would definitely pick for the late era one, like that Lack of Interest record from 2016, I think, is the last record they put out.
They put one out that late? Wow.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
they did. Holy shit.
It's like a repress, but maybe it came out. When did it come out originally?
I don't know. But I like those Fucking the Beach records.
99, sorry. It came out 99, sorry.
Yeah. But I like those Fucking the Beach records. Those are later. The Crossed Out comp's great. You know, those are later ones. Mm-hmm. I like the last Spaz record. I haven't heard it in a long time, but like, I remember really liking it when it came out.
Yeah, I love the last Spaz record when it came out. I love
and
that
record. And the cover so of that record is kind of like symbolizes it.
Yeah.
For me, the cover of this record, although it's a bit cartoony, but it has a bit of like a graffiti aesthetic. And it's like, I remember this is like back when I used to really like, and I guess I still do this a little bit, but not as much. When you would like dissect like a record or CD you got, this was one that was always perplexing to me because it had so much
going on.
Yeah. That I'm just like, okay, well hold on here. Like, it's like, okay, clearly these guys are like Californian, you know, whatever, aggressive music dudes, but like they look like they like rap and they like reference rap and it's got like graffiti stuff and it's got like Japanese nods on the label. It's just like, yeah, so this one got the whatever the, it just made me want to know more.
Yeah,
and so I would say like this record, like this whatever this release is particularly poignant as far as aesthetically serving what we're talking about.
Yeah, no, I agree. What about Off the Disc records? I was so stoked to get to talk about that.
Yes, I Do not have much off the disc, sadly, but yes, I am aware. Mainly because of the Infest thing is what I always think of when I think of off the disc. But you guys went through it, so I'm trying to pull it up right now to dissect some of that with you. Yeah, because there was something you mentioned in the interview, and I didn't remember that they did. Well, the Morbid Angel, I didn't know. That's wild. Oh, it was the Red Fisher. When you guys brought that up, I was like, what? Like, I had no... Because I think I have this record.
I need that record.
Maybe I don't know. I might have this. It's been a long time since I've looked through the R section of my 7 inches, but I'll search for it. And I will contemplate giving it to you should I have it.
How did that happen? Like, how do you think that... Like, it's just like the most random outlier in that label's discography. Like, a great band, important band. I gotta interview someone from Red Fisher.
Yeah. I agree.
And then they'll be like, oh, that's a different Red Fisher. They'll be like, oh.
No, I don't. Let me see here, though. It seems to be the same unless it's been attributed. Oh.
It's been attributed. I don't know. It's been attributed to them.
Yeah, true. But maybe it isn't. Well, let's see. Does it list anything where it was recorded? Yeah, no, that's them. Manitoba, Canada.
That's wild. Wild.
That is wild. That one, like, it's the this is what this podcast lives for, is moments like this where it's like, how did that happen?
Yeah.
And like, why does that exist? And its absurdity in a way is kind of the best thing ever at the same time.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was the one that got mentioned that I wasn't aware of. And looking at the record now, I feel like I'd probably own this, but I have to go look. The other one is this, like, this has got to be a different shutdown, I would imagine. No? This is not the same as the Victory
Yeah, that's shutdown. A different shutdown. It's got to be.
Yeah. Because I'm like, what? I didn't think they were around that
but long. But Sleep. That's a real Sleep.
Yeah. This label's got an interesting run as well. I mean, I think Citizen's Arrest, too. Is that the same label or is someone falsely?
I think it's the same label.
Because 2010, they still did records? Warden, yeah, I guess it is weird. But anyway, the one that I always think of with this label is the Infest Slave, which is essential that I still don't own.
Yeah,
but yeah, very cool label.
That's the only record where I'm glad I have the repress more than the original, because the repress has got that crazy fucking half record where like half is green, half is blue.
The repress of it. Hold on. What are you talking about? Let me see here. I'm trying to look it up.
There's like a second press.
The Deep Six one or the Off the Disc?
No, it's Off Disc. Off the Disc had two pressings. One's like quasi unofficial, but what they somehow did is the A side is blue and the B side's green.
Oh.
I'm not looking at it right now, so maybe I have the colors fucked up, but something like that.
Huh.
It's the wildest split color record I've ever seen.
You're right. I'm looking at it right now. Let me just see here. It is second pressing, solid blue, two-color version, which had one side toothpaste, the other side turquoise, it lists here.
Yeah.
Huh. Limited to 100 copies, yeah.
And I don't know how they did it.
Yeah, that is strange. I've never seen that either. Well, actually, there is a way that you could do it, because when you see them, like if you've ever watched the record pressing things, if the puck is made in a way where the color is separated like that.
But yeah. Yeah, you're right. Like, you put, like, one puck down for the A side and
but
put
that, on like,
either side of the stamper.
How annoying would that be if you worked, oh, my God, like, working there, having to set up that record 100 times, doing that nonsense?
You probably were like, I'm making one of the most important hardcore records.
I have a feeling they weren't thinking that, but well, yes.
I'm defining the next era of hardcore, sonically. I got to do this.
Like, if that were happening at Third Man, like, now, that makes sense. Yeah. But, like, back then, in 90 or 88, pardon me, no, I'd have a feeling it's not the thought.
Oh, man. Yeah. There's a lot more to dissect with this episode. I think we should leave it for here right now, if you don't mind, Chris.
Yeah, not a problem.
I gotta go make dinner for the kids.
Well, hey, that's what happens when you're a dad, right?
I tell you, that's what does happen. But this has been a lot of fun. I wish we could let's put a tack in this, but we gotta pin it, I should say. But next week we're gonna have a monster of an episode.
Yeah, agreed. And we also we will hopefully revisit some of these topics based on the mailbag that is
coming up. Yeah, like write in, give us your top slap ham records, write in, tell us all about whatever you want to talk about. Off the disc records, of course, is always a welcome topic around here. but next week, it's the guy that got me in a punk in a real way, Thurston Moore. It is, you know, if you ever want to hear Thurston Moore talk about the fast, then this is the right podcast for you next week.
The five of you out there.
Yeah. Have you ever been like, what's it like hearing Thurston Moore talk about hearing Finnish hardcore for the first time? Well, I got you.
Nice.
It's an amazing episode. There's a lot of incredible stories, like Richard Hell trying to lick the back of his hand to stick the stamp on Thurston Moore's hand to sneak him into CBGB's the first time he went to CB's. Like,
incredible.
There's some wild stuff in it. We'll have a lot to talk about next week, Chris. But that's it for me. Anything else you want to add?
No, I think the only thing I want to say on the bat, well, I want to add one thing in a humorous way, which is if you're talking about, like, this is the podcast for you, we got you, or the one your interview.
Yeah.
I think, like, imagine you have an audience, like you're performing a concert, except it's you, you know, interviewing Thurston Moore, and the whole time, like, this fast topic comes up, and there's, like, some really infuriated people at the back of the room that are just yelling, like, Daydream Nation, because they're so fed up that you're not getting there.
He talks about Daydream Nation. We talk about Daydream Nation versus Sister.
Yeah.
A little bit too, but no, this is like Thurston was there at Ground Zero for punk and Ground Zero for New York hardcore, and it's amazing to kind of get that story, especially for, you know, from him of all people. Like, I could be talking to him about being on the fucking Simpsons, you know, but yeah. Like, this podcast is about putting together the minutia.
Yeah.
And my God, do we put some together next week?
Yeah. We're not here for Daydream Nation. Get out of
no,
here.
No. No, this is strictly the master class.
Yes, is the split with Ayamatsuka. This is the podcast for that.
Yeah, this is like the confusion is sex neutral pressing.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. You know,
we're not coming here. We're not coming here with even like an SST repress.
No.
You know. But yeah, no. This has been a lot of fun as always, Chris. Thank you for hanging out and chatting, and you know, on your own show. But, yeah, and I'll see you next week.
Yeah, for sure, dude.